Welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, Maddie Alm, registered dietitian and former professional runner. Today's guest is Emma Coburn. Emma is a Colorado native where she was an eight-time Colorado State champion while in high school. She went on to run for the University of Colorado where she was a six-time All-American and three-time NCAA champion. Emma signed a professional contract with New Balance out of college and has been a 10-time U.S. champion, nine-time Team USA member, three-time Olympian. She was the Olympic bronze medalist in the 3K steeple at the 2016 Olympic Games in Rio. She was the gold medalist in the 3K steeple at the 2017 World Champs in London. And in 2019, Emma was the silver medalist in the 3K steeple at the World Championships in Doha, Qatar. Emma is the founder of the professional group based in Boulder, Team Boss. She is still a professional runner for New Balance and a new mom to her daughter, Betty. I hope you enjoy today's episode with Emma Coburn. Hi, Emma. Welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm so happy you're here.
Hi, Maddie. Thanks for having me.
Yay. We got to catch up a little bit. We live in different places now, which is so sad. So it was good to catch up and hear all about the warm weather, which we're both in warm weather, I guess.
I know. I miss you, though. I wish you were here in person, but we're doing our thing. And I'm so excited for this podcast. When I saw you posted about it, I was like, this is going to be so helpful. People are going to love this. I feel like talking about food is sometimes like so taboo in this sport and with women that I don't feel that way at all. So I'm happy to like, let's just chat, you know,
we'll just
talk about what we think is important about it.
For sure. And I think like you and I have had a lot of conversations about food and fueling and nutrition over the years. And I just think you have such a fresh perspective compared to a lot of runners and that it's not a taboo thing for you. You grew up, you know, in a household that enjoyed food and really cooking and dinners and that kind of stuff was a really integral part of your family. So I think it's going to be really fun for everybody to hear your perspective. So yeah, just starting off, Emma, most people I think here are probably familiar with Emma Coburn, but tell us a little bit about yourself and how you started out in running.
I am a professional track and field athlete. My event is the steeplechase and I'm a three-time Olympian, Olympic bronze medalist, world champion, world silver medalist, and 10-time U.S. champion in that event. So I've been doing this a while.
Just a little while. No big deal.
Yeah, this is, I think, my 13th season as a professional athlete.
Wow.
And not only to, like, be able to get, you know, to be able to be running in college and a college scholarship and then to be able to transition into pro life and then to have a long career as a pro, obviously that's due to a lot of really good training, really good coaching, and then a lot of good nutrition. And I think as you mentioned, I definitely was lucky in the sense that like the way I grew up, food was very, the relationship I had with food was always good due to, I think, how my mom cooked, and we can go into more of that later, but, I was really lucky that I always had a good relationship with food and with my body. And it wasn't really until I got to college and would go to other track meets and kind of observe how different athletes looked that I was like, huh, there's some differences here. And again, it didn't affect how I felt about myself, but it just really kind of opened my eyes to the, how common it is to have bad relationships with food and underfueling in the sport. And then of course, transitioning out of college. In college, I was a three-time NCAA champion, twice in the steeplechase, once in the indoor mile. And I only ever had one injury while I was there. It was my last week of college, literally, I got an injury. So spent a lot of my college years, you know, competing at high level, but also training correctly, fueling correctly, and had good success and was able to be a pro and have had mostly a really healthy pro career compared to most of my peers. And a lot of that is again due to eating a lot and not worrying about like the comparison with other people. I think that's really important too.
Absolutely. And yeah, I definitely want to get into your philosophy on fueling and some of the things that, you know, you've learned along the way. But I want to rewind a little bit to high school, Emma, growing up in little town of Crested Butte. So for people who aren't familiar, mountain town, small mountain town, really high elevation, really cold and brutal winters. Did you always run, or did you do any other sports when you were growing up in Crested Butte?
Yeah, I only signed up for track because my family had a rule that you had to participate in sports year round, and like track was the only spring sport. So my older brother had to sign up for track, my sister had to sign up, and so I followed suit. And I really hated running. I was not for me. Running is really hard, and especially when you're young, I think you have that. Watch any 5-year-old go run and they sprint the first 100 and then they like walk, jog, get a stomach cramp. You know, that's kind of how kids are,
Yes.
to where you don't have any real skills of endurance yet. But so, and you're just like, it's so painful every time you run. And so I skied and I was on the volleyball team and the basketball team and I was on the hockey team and hated running, but I did it because I had to. And again, year round in Crested Butte, you can't even run unless you're going to go on a treadmill. So the winter was basketball and then skiing for fun. And then I would just kind of get fit enough through basketball to be somewhat successful in track. But really didn't like running until I was probably a senior in high school. And even then was like wishy-washy about it. And I really only started kind of trying more because I met my now husband and coach, Joe. He moved to Crested Butte his junior year and he really loved running and I kind of had a crush on him and I was like, oh, okay, I admire this guy. I guess I could try harder in my running like how he does. And I still hated the physical experience of running, and honestly probably not until the summer before college did I kind of remember going on a couple runs in the summer at Lower Loop and CB and being like, wow, actually this is nice. So I was a very late bloomer to running and to loving running and loving the sport and kind of loving the journey that you can get yourself on through it physically and mentally, all of that. I was a softie to where I just wanted basketball and volleyball and the fun team sports, and I wasn't really ready for the hurt that came with running or kind of the individual pressure that came with running. But it worked out, and luckily I ended up running in college and, you know, falling more in love with it and was successful and truly just, you know, love going on runs now. But I was definitely late compared to a lot of my friends.
It's funny because I feel like there's a lot of runners who have a similar thing where we started out running because it was to train for another sport or because our friends were doing it and we didn't actually like running to begin with. And I think it's so funny that there are so many runners who share that story. But something that like we've talked about and Joe has talked about is that specialization. So the idea of, you know, honing in on running and just running super early in life can take away from some of the skills that help you become a better runner and stay injury-free later. And I think for me, from a nutrition standpoint, it's such a different approach in different sports where there's less of an emphasis on, you know, things like body type and fueling. And so a lot of young athletes who don't specialize early find that they have healthier relationships with food later on. So I'm curious for you, do you feel like taking a while to come around to running made a difference in your longevity in the sport, either from a nutrition or an injury standpoint?
I definitely think from an injury standpoint and from a mentality standpoint, and again, we'll talk about it, but I think how nutrition was in my life was never affected or impacted by running. And whenever running got more serious in my life, my nutrition wasn't kind of altered in a negative way at all. And so I think from a nutrition standpoint, I don't necessarily think me specializing later impacted things, but definitely from a psychological standpoint, where when I got to college, I was the worst person on the team. I had the worst personal best of my freshman class. And I was just, there was no pressure. I was just excited to learn. I was excited to be the worst one and kind of work my way up. And I didn't have, I remember talking to my dad my freshman year on the phone, and the agreement was like, I was just gonna do it. I didn't tell our coaches this, but my agreement with my dad was I was just gonna do it for 6 months, and if I hated it, I would quit. And we were not quitters. That was like a, you know, we were not allowed to quit things when we signed up for it, but that was an agreement. It was like, if you are miserable, you don't have to do it. And so I remember, you know, talking on the phone with my dad. I would call him like every day after practice, and most of the days were like, so, even if I got my butt kicked, it was just so positive because it was this whole new world that I really hadn't experienced because I specialized so late. And because I was always super competitive and very fit just from playing all my other sports. Like I had developed, actually some aerobic fitness from like running and basketball, but, muscularly really fit and, had challenged my body with moving in different ways. But from a psychological standpoint, when I was running in college my freshman year, it was all new and exciting. And I was like, what's a tempo? You know, like what's a long run? Like all of these things, I think it was fresh. And even though it could have been scary and intimidating, it was like I had nothing to compare it to. So it was like, this is all cool and opportunity and fun, and I'm gonna grow from this, and I'm gonna just try and keep up with the girls who are better than me. And so that was definitely a perk of not being a serious runner when I was young.
That's so funny. We've never really talked about this. I didn't realize you had the slowest PR on the CU team. I did too. And we both kind of worked our way up, which is so funny. I guess it's easy to assume, like even for me who knows you really well, that you just kind of came in and were immediately so good at the sport. And I think that's important to keep in mind too for young runners, where I think especially with social media, we lean more into things like the running and that kind of take on like, I am a runner, this is me, this is my life. But there's so much to be gained from things outside of running and having that life balance, which I think is another thing that's very unique about you. You've always had a really good balanced life approach to running and life outside of running. So, just one more thing for high school, Emma. If there's any young high schooler out there listening, what's a piece of advice you would give them?
I'm gonna say a couple things. One is like it's supposed to be hard. I think that when we're young, and this was something I didn't know as a high schooler, when it got hard in running and racing, I would just drop out or throw up or whatever. I cried on the starting line of races because I was so nervous. Like a big takeaway is like it is supposed to be hard, and it is hard for everyone. So when you are, 4K into a 5K cross country race and you are hurting and you're doubting yourself and you're thinking of letting off the gas and you're looking around and there's all these women around you, all these girls around you who look strong, like they are hurting too. They are also battling their, in their own heads. And so I think that was something that I did a poor job of when I was younger. Was and that was honestly something Joe really taught me, even before we were dating. It was just like as friends, I really observed that in him, is that he was willing to really work hard and not just work hard of like I show up to practice on time and I do what the coach tells me and I go home and I eat right and I go to sleep early. I don't mean that working hard. That's just like routine and discipline. I mean like work hard in the depths of those ouchy moments, finding a way to like challenge yourself and take that risk and really push. And Joe really kind of was one of the first people who I remember I observed that in and admired and then like tried to take that on myself. So I wish I would have, I mean, wish it all worked out, but like I could have done a much better job in high school of that. But the good thing high school Emma did was I was just like happy person. I enjoyed my friends, I enjoyed my family, I enjoyed my other sports. I didn't fully define myself by every race or everything that happened. I think my last race of high school, I dropped out of because I was dealing with plantar fasciitis and had like my Colorado state meet. I think I dropped out of my senior year one race. And 2 weeks later I had high school nationals and I got second and like I didn't dwell on that bad moment. And so I think that was a really good, to your point of like perspective and life and keeping running in the right perspective. It wasn't all or nothing for me. And so I think as you get better in the sport, having that mindset is very important because the races get bigger, the pressures get bigger, the expectations get bigger. And if you can do that first thing where you really learn to challenge yourself in those tough, tough moments, and then also have that perspective with what running means in your whole life, those are two really important skills to develop. And I had the life, the running perspective down in high school, but I did not really have the pushing through tough things and remembering it's supposed to be hard. High school Emma was bad at that one.
I think that's the hardest part of running. It's such a mental sport. Of course, it's incredibly challenging physically, but there is that moment that you have that option in a race where it's like, this is so hard, or workout, and you're like, I could back off a little and make it a little easier. You have that option, and it's sort of like you're your own worst enemy in that moment, and it takes a lot of time to push through that. So I think that's some really great advice. I definitely struggled with that in high school and honestly in college as well. And you know, part of that balance outside of running, which is, you know, why we're here, the nutrition piece, growing up in a smaller town, being involved in different sports, what do you feel like your first experience was when it came to nutrition and performance? When did that light bulb go off that those two are connected for you?
I always ate a lot of food, so I never have memories of feeling underfueled or having a light bulb moment of like, oh, I didn't eat enough and I bonked. I don't have memories of that. But my freshman year of cross country, I would throw up in the middle of every single cross country race, like multiple times. One, I think it was fitness, not fit enough to do what I was trying to do, but also I think I was just eating incorrectly leading up to it. And so my real only light bulb kind of memory of high school nutrition and related to performance was that I started having a bagel with peanut butter and banana 3 hours before I raced, and literally that's still my pre-race meal. So like 20 years later, that is still what I have. And now I'll also have like a gel, you know, right before I warm up or right after my warm up. Like I'll have a little bit more food than that, but that I quit throwing up. So
Wow.
that was important.
Yeah, for sure. And I love that you found your pre-race fuel so early on in life and you're still sticking with it.
And the nice thing is, like, no matter where I'm racing in the world, I can find that everywhere. Peanut butter is sometimes a hard one to find, but you can travel with the little Justins and, you know, single serve, and you're good to go. So, I've had times that, like, you know, I'm in Paris and it's a baguette instead of, you know, a bagel or something like that. But it all, you know, it's a pretty reliable meal.
For sure. Yeah, so it sounds like having a healthy relationship with food for you made it so that you weren't really thinking a ton about it until you were experiencing throwing up in the middle of races, which is no fun. Did you ever notice people around you struggling, or was there a time when you started to realize other people struggled and maybe you had never seen that before?
As Maddie knows, literally my cross country team was like my sister and my best friend Smalls, and like that was it. And we all were good with food. We all ate a lot. So, and like two other girls who also were good with food. So we in my sports teams, whether it was basketball, volleyball, or running, we all ate normally and plenty of food, and no one had dietary restrictions to where food was even talked about. I think when I was in college, though, you know, when I was in school at University of Colorado, we had a very good team culture with eating. I thought that was my perspective and my experience. You know, when you're in school with there's you know, 30 or 40 women on a team, there's always one person who might have an odd relationship with food. And so of course I observed that a little bit in college here and there, but typically the women who were on varsity and who were the front of the pack and who were the captains of the team and who were the leaders all ate a lot of food and all had body types that looked strong, whether it was strong muscularly or strong, you know, like just you could tell that they weren't going to break any bones, you know.
Yeah.
So I feel like our leaders on the team were all well built and strong women and ate well. Like my friend who made the Olympic team with me in 2012, Shalea, her favorite hobby, both of our favorite hobbies, was like make cakes for people and eat them. Like it was just food wasn't a talked about or stressful part of my college experience for really anyone except maybe one or two people here and there. And it is just weird when you see it, but at a certain point, I never felt like an influence that a pressure to conform to that. And I think I was lucky because the leaders and the best people on the team did have good relationships with food. Like my freshman year, I was roommates with Jenny Simpson, and at meets, we'd be roommates, sorry, and she would eat a ton of food. And I was like, all right, well, she's an Olympian and she eats good food, so I'll do the same.
Yeah, and I think having that team environment and team culture where fueling is a priority for everybody really trickles down. Like you said, when you were a freshman, you had really good role models on the team to show you this is what we do for fueling. We eat a lot, and you always had done that anyway. So you were just sort of like, okay, I'm just going to continue with what I've been doing. And a question I get a lot from young runners is like, how do I create an environment for myself or for my teammates that, focuses on fueling and taking care of ourselves? Do you have anything to add to that, or anything that you could, any advice you could give to a runner in that situation?
I think leading by example with anything is always the best tactic. As you mature in not just the sport, but in life, you realize that like your words or you trying to micromanage someone or babysit someone is a waste of your own time and effort, and it's going to make that person take a step back anyway. So it's like, I think it's best to just lead by example, whether that's showing up early, whether that's doing the exact assignment your coach gives you, it's getting good grades in school, whatever the expectations that you hope to see in your friends, you have to be the first one to implement them. Because if you're not implementing it, why the hell would they ever listen to your advice or your micromanaging? And of course, randomly there's times that girls will want to say, oh, so and so didn't eat all their pasta last night, and they're going to want to make a thing about it. But you know what? It's like, if you eat all of your pasta, that's all you can control. So I think
Yes.
leading by example is important. And I think one thing I didn't necessarily do a great job of with my nutrition and fueling while I was in college, but I kind of was lucky because my instincts were right, was I wasn't quite intentional all the time about I knew that I should eat after practice, but I wouldn't necessarily have brought my protein shake with me, or I wouldn't have necessarily, I think those are areas that I could have done a slightly better job of was, I ate big dinners and I ate during the day before practice and all of that. But like, there are little things that I think you can do as a high school or college athlete to be slightly more professional with your fueling, and when your peers see you doing that, they might implement it as well. So an easy thing is, of course, Maddie, your Instagram, you always are showing like great post-run snacks and stuff, but literally grabbing a chocolate milk and putting that in your bag and having your chocolate milk right after you finish your run, and your trail mix or whatever your other thing is going to be. And I think by second half of college, we would finish our runs and go straight to the weight room and grab a chocolate milk. But I think early in college, we didn't have the chocolate milk in the weight room. I don't remember. But so just, I do think that that's like, to answer your question, leading by example and like something small like that can give a good signal to your peers to do that. And then I also, the last thing is, I think it seems counterintuitive, but like, don't talk about food much. Like if you are someone who is micromanaging what other people are eating and observing it and tracking it and obsessing about it, even if you believe that you have a healthy relationship with food, like let it go. Don't think about what other people are doing. Don't talk about what other people are doing. Obviously, if there's extreme concern about someone, go to the coach, say something once and say, I did that once in college. I said, I'm concerned about this person. I'm staying out of it, but I just want to let you know this is what I've observed. And I gave a couple examples of what I've observed. And then I stayed out of it. And I never talked about it again. And I just said, if this is going to be something they want to deal with, great. And if not, it's not my problem. And so I think those are, some important things for young runners to implement.
Absolutely. I definitely think focusing on yourself is the only thing you can do. You only have control over yourself and what you're eating, and controlling what someone else is doing will not affect you one way or the other. If anything, it's going to add more stress to your life and to mealtime, and maybe even affect your relationship with food. So I think that's really great advice. And especially with if you're seeing somebody struggling, like you don't have to just leave them on their own to suffer in silence, but Yeah, I mean, acknowledging it to somebody who could potentially help them and acknowledging, like, that's not me. I'm not really the person who's going to be able to help them, but I do care about them. I want to make sure that, you know, someone's looking out for them and recognizing mm-hmm. when that's your job and when it's not. And I would say 99% of the time it's not. You know, it's not your job. Yeah. Unless you're me, who's a dietitian, right? It's just, it's not your job. So I think focusing on yourself is something that a lot of runners can take away from that. Just whether it's training, like you said earlier, or fueling, you can only do what you can do. Trusting yourself, 100%. Trusting the process is huge. And because of all of this, you went on, like you said, you had one injury in college, and then you were able to go on and you're still running professionally 13 years later. What was that transition from college to professional running like for you?
I had a pretty seamless transition, honestly, from college to pro, because I stayed with my college coaches. So I was running in a different brand of shoes. my college shoes were Nike and my professional shoes were New Balance. And of course I was like getting a paycheck, but no, the transition, I stayed in my same town. I had my same coaches. That was all very easy. And then when I was in college, I had been racing professional races for 2 years prior to graduating. And so that also was an easy transition, as I'd already kind of dipped my toes into the professional world. And I think, again, it's all what you make it. Like, I just was like, great, I'm just continuing on. I'm not letting the expectations or pressures of now I'm a pro, overwhelm me. But I was lucky. I think I had a really smooth, easy transition.
How do you feel like your fueling shifted from college to pro, or what are some things you've learned as a pro?
When I became a pro, I just had a lot more free time, so not being in classes. So I started cooking a lot more. When we were in college, Joe was actually our chef. I know. He made every single dinner for us.
My jaw's on the floor right now.
I know. And then he had labrum surgery in 2012 and like was laid up on the couch for 6 weeks. And I had to like learn to cook. And so, yeah, he was our chef. But so when I graduated in 2013, I just had so much free time and I just started really loving cooking. And so I think later half of college, my fueling became slightly more intentional, not necessarily with caloric intake, but just being a little bit more diligent of like, you know, after my run, I need to make sure I'm eating enough. You know, my dinner, I have to make sure I'm cooking dinner early enough so that I can actually eat a good meal and get to bed early. And you know, it was just a little bit more diligent on my timing and structure of my eating. And so that transition, as I said, was like pretty smooth and seamless. So that kind of just continued on. But I just really started loving cooking and baking. And that is, I think, when I started like way back then, like posting random, you know, back when Instagram was in its infancy, little pictures of what I made and all of that. And that, I think, was kind of the seeds that got planted into one, me loving cooking and me loving baking especially. But then eventually that grew into me, yeah, making my cookbook. Yeah, however, 7 years later.
Your cookbook. I want to talk about your cookbook because it's so fun, and I love the recipes in it because they are very, what's the word? They're very, like, you can do them.
Normal?
Yeah, they're normal. Like, they don't require, like, all these weird ingredients that you have to go to, like, four different stores to find, and they're things that are good and balanced and well-rounded but don't require, like, top chef cooking skills, and I just love that about your cookbook, and I know you draw on inspiration from friends and family, so tell us a little bit about the process of creating a cookbook. What was that like?
It was super fun. You were around for a lot of it. I got asked to write a cookbook. The publisher approached me and asked me to write a cookbook. And it was COVID. And so when lockdown happened, I was just like recipe testing and making food all the time. And that was really fun, but you have to come up with 101 recipes. So that's wow. that's a lot to think of.
Yeah.
And the fun thing, though, is, like you said, my mom was a great cook, and Maddie has had, you know, hundreds of meals that my mom would make, and we would do team camps in Crested Butte where we would have, you know, 15 people come over after our run or our workout, come to my mom's for brunch or for dinner, and so she was just the type of person that would like open the fridge and be like, oh, let me take this and this and this. And we were an ingredient household for sure. You know, she would just like grab stuff and then be like, whip this up. And it's like, oh, here's brunch for 20. And she made it look so easy and effortless. And it, her instinct was always, it was just making yummy food. But she did always have, as you know, color, protein, carbs, she always had such a great, well-balanced plate to give us. And so that's just my, how my experience growing up was. Like every night, you know, at dinner, that was what our meals were, what is in the cookbook. And so there was always, it was always yummy. It wasn't forced of, okay, you know what, quinoa is healthier or brown rice is healthier, so we're going to have that instead of the white rice, even though the white rice will taste better with this beef and broccoli. You know, like there, she never did that. And so mm-hmm. I never had that experience. And I think there's certain people and certain, what do they call them? Granola moms who are kind of so health obsessed that they end up accidentally ruining a lot of these like mealtime experiences by doing all these swaps or doing, oh, these are date chocolate chip cookies and it's cacao nibs and it's blended oats instead of flour. And if you have an allergy or you feel like trying a new recipe, you know, I have a couple recipes in my cookbook that are like, you know, a dairy-free thing or a, date something or other, you know, like it's fun to experiment with things and try new things. And a lot of these recipes that are more like nutrition forward, I don't know the correct words, they can turn out yummy, but I feel like there's certain people who, they might grow up with only that type of food experience. And I didn't. And so when I wrote my cookbook, that is reflected in all the recipes. And, my mom helped me think of a ton of the recipes because I'm like 101 recipes. I'm like going through, I'm like, I think okay, mom, I got to think of like 4 more dinners. What do you got? What did we eat? And she would help me. And so if you look at that cookbook, it is, such a reflection of how I grew up eating. And I talk about kind of my food philosophy in it of fuel your body well. There shouldn't be good foods, bad foods. It should just be a mix. And if you're getting, you know, fruits and vegetables and protein, then like it does, like have a cookie or have, mm-hmm. you know, like that's not going to mess anything up. Trust me. And if you're having whole, you know, it's so much better to have like, I think like whole food, real ingredients, and it might include more butter and salt and fat than if you did like the diet version of it. But the diet version of it has like, you know, all the preservatives and all that crap in it. And I'm like, you know, a 100 calorie pack of light off-brand Goldfish versus like, if I just make something versus like a yummy chocolate chip cookie that has real sugar, real butter, real flour, like I kind of feel like I'm going to be fine, you know? And so I'm rambling at this point, but just get my cookbook, you know, it'll explain a lot. It's called The Runner's Kitchen and you can get it at Amazon or you can get it a signed copy from my website, emmacoburn.com/shop.
There we go. Pick it up today. Yeah. Your cookbook is so fun. I make recipes from it all the time. I made the Bim Bim Bap the other night and I love that one. I can't say it.
Neither can I. It's on the cover and I can't say it. It's on the cover of the cookbook and I can't say it. Bim Bim Bap. Bim Bim Bap.
Beep beep boop. Yeah, yeah, so good, whatever it is, and that's always one of our favorites. But it sounds like something for you with food too is it's about the fuel and it's about, you know, the food, but it's also about kind of the environment and like you have so many happy memories with eating dinner with your family and cooking with your mom. And some of my personal favorite memories from being on Team Boss is going to your parents' house, Danny Ranch, and enjoying these incredible spreads that your mom, like you said, would just whip up, and they were so fun. And I think that's an important thing to take away from your story too, is that food can do more than just nourish your body. It can be something that brings people together and creates fun memories. And that's something that people can miss out on. Like you said, if you like the almond mom thing or like the diet trends, if you're kind of focused on those things, it takes away from what else food can do for you.
Totally. And I think too, as you're cooking. And like, I think one reason I loved, Shalaya and I both loved baking a lot in college and post-college, was like making someone a birthday cake and then sharing that cake with them and all of that. Like, that is such a fun experience, and bringing people together. And of course, yeah, like the memories I have throughout growing up and the memories that Teen Boss has had around the table. Like, I do think if you can take away the fear and anxiety and stress related to food, and just see it as like, this is all value add. Like, this is all good. And whether it's maple syrup or it's a strawberry, it's all good. Just don't stress. And again, like, running is very hard. It's hard on your body. You burn a lot of calories. And so you need good calories, and not being restrictive, and just knowing that every time you're giving your body good food, it's going to perform better, you know?
Absolutely. And you're a mom now. You have a little baby daughter, Betty. What are some things with nutrition that you want to instill in her?
I hope I just get to give her the same experience that my mom gave me. You know, again, we were a very just running around, climbing mountains, going on bike rides type of family, like a lot of Colorado families are. And food was just a great way to set ourselves up to do those adventures and to feel good and to feel warm and cozy and happy through that food. And so, yeah, I just hope I get to give her that and to create a space for her where she doesn't have to feel, where she doesn't think or fear food in any way. Like, I've told this to Maddie, but like, my standard high school eating was like, in the morning I'd have eggs and toast, and then at 10:15 a.m. my school had snack time, and I would have like a bagel and cream cheese and a bag of nacho Doritos, and then at lunch I would have like a salad, but then I'd also get like the school's like mini corn dogs on the side, and then after school I would have like, you know, a PB&J or like something quick before sports, and then I'd come home and I'd have like whatever great meal my mom made, and so, and then dessert. Like, so I was having the Doritos in there, and I was having a salad in there, and I was having mini corn dogs in there, and it was by doing it that way and not having like restrictions, but also making sure I am, you know, I'm not just living on Doritos and corn dogs. I'm getting my eggs and my salad, and at dinner there's vegetables. Like, I'm still getting my nutrients, and my color and my greens. But they're just, you don't have to live in like a binary world where like it's all junk food and like I am just a teenager who's gonna just only have fast food and junk food, or I'm only gonna eat clean. Like, it's just do it all. Do a little bit of both.
Yeah.
And then there's it takes away a lot of the stress and pressure, I think.
Totally. I think the theme here is like, don't overthink it. You know, like, you can find a place for the corn dogs and you can find a place for the salad, and it doesn't have to be one or the other. It can be both. And so instead of thinking about what you can take away, thinking about what you can add, you know, I think that's an important distinction too, is you're thinking about, okay, well, I need something more with my salad, so I'm going to have corn dogs, or I need to make sure that I'm also getting the fruits and the veggies, so I'm doing those things. And there's just this balance that allows you to get what you need without overthinking it. And I think that's huge. And something else that I really admire about you and have seen through your career is how you handle like injuries and off seasons with fueling. I think because you have this approach where there's balance and there's room for everything, it's a lot easier for you to navigate different seasons. So how would you say you navigate fueling when you're on your break or when you're injured?
When I am on my break, I typically in like the off season try and gain some weight. Kind of the nature of intense track workouts is like, it's pretty natural to drop a couple pounds, really just because of the type of workouts are burning so much. And so, that's pretty common. And typically I like drink less alcohol when I'm competing. Not like I drink a ton outside of that, but, so then that's losing a couple pounds during the racing season. And of course, when I was in like high school, this was not a topic. And when I was in college, this was not a topic. This is like as a professional. But in the off season, I definitely try and gain some weight. And so that is literally when I am full. It is eating that extra cookie, eating that extra thing of yogurt. I do try and gain some weight because of one, I think it's important for my body and my hormones and all of that to just like top up. But then I also think it's like a training advantage because then if you train for like 5 months with like a 5 pound weight vest on, that when the nature of the training naturally like takes a couple pounds off, you feel like pretty good. And so I tend to gain a couple pounds above my natural weight in the off season and then kind of get back to my natural weight for a bulk of the season. And then maybe the last, you know, month or so of the season when the workouts get really intense, a couple pounds less than that. But I really just, I think a lot of people don't spend their off season topping up. Yeah. I'm very intentional with trying to gain some weight in the off season. And I think when I'm injured, I don't care, as you know, naturally you're going to gain weight when you're injured, just because you're not exercising quite as intensely. But that is when I spend more time probably focusing on my like nutrients. So I'm like, I really want to get, I mean, I'm still having, you know, like gummy bears on the bike and all of that, but like, I'm really saying like, okay, my body needs extra sleep. My body does not need alcohol. My body needs, you know, all of the fruits and veggies and protein and good carbs. Like I almost eat just more intentionally and calorically, I'm actually trying to eat more because typically I'm cross training and I want to make sure I don't lose any weight and I want to make sure I'm gained weight. But, I'm a little bit more intentional when I'm injured about like eating, making sure I'm getting all the stuff I need, making sure my macros are kind of getting to the levels I need them to. And then when I'm healthy and running a lot, when I'm training so much, I just am eating everything in sight. So, so that is, it's pretty easy to fuel well, I feel like, when you're fully training, because you just, you are craving everything and you eat everything and it all just works really well. It's kind of when you're hurt, you have to be a little bit more intentional because your appetite's a little less, but you really have to make sure you're giving your body everything it needs.
I love that distinction too, where you were saying like in the off season, you allow your weight to float up. And when you're injured, you allow your weight to float up because a lot of athletes I work with, they make the mistake of trying to either maintain their weight or lower their weight during those times. And like you said, that's when your body is trying to get into more energy balance or even into a surplus. And with injuries, cross training takes so much energy. You're healing and you're training sometimes more than you would be when you're actually running. Mm-hmm. And so staying on top of your fueling is a huge piece of coming back from an injury. And one thing I loved watching for you is when you were coming back from your ankle, you were eating so much like rice on the bike. Like you were really hitting those carbs home. And that was a shift I noticed in you. And even in Joe, you guys were diving a lot more into the science of like carb intake and really focusing on your carb intake. And that's something I see a lot of runners struggle with. So yeah, how has your approach to carbs shifted?
So I think because I always ate a lot of food and I always knew calorically I was eating enough, I kind of just assumed I was eating enough carbs. And then Joe had me track for about a week what my actual carb intake was. And I'm forgetting now, you will probably remember, but like, I think I was only eating like 200 grams a day and I wanted to be eating at least 400. So that was just a shift of, because I had really been mindful of making sure I was getting enough protein, because that was always the area that I had tracked before and I was always a little low. So I really was more thoughtful on, you know, if I'm hungry, let me get something with protein. And so now it became, if I'm hungry, got to get something with protein, but then I'm also later going to have a bowl of rice and honey, even if I'm not hungry, because I just need to get, you know, the 80 grams of carbs that come with that meal.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I've learned a little bit better now, how to just naturally get there without having to just like pound rice. But I do think, especially as you age and your body evolves in the sport, like it is important to like do little check-ins of like, all right, I feel like I'm doing it right, but let me just confirm, or, oh, I wasn't doing it quite right. Let me adapt. And, we do that, you know, a couple times a year where I just check in with, you know, tracking what I'm eating, or, even doing a DEXA to just make sure that like my body's where I feel like it needs to be, during the correct time of year. And I think no one's ever a perfect expert. You have to be kind of humble enough to do check-ins and, change as you need. And so, yeah, it's a lot of, literally right now I'm eating, well, I have an English muffin and a thing of yogurt in front of me right now. So yeah. Carbs and protein.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I love that you said it's that like evolution. You're not just figuring out what works for you at one point in your career and doing that indefinitely. You're always mm-hmm. evolving and changing. And I think that's something I learned too, you know, when I was in high school, college, becoming a dietitian, I was learning like, okay, I've made these changes. I feel so much better. So I've nailed it. And then I would be like, learn later, oh, I actually need to do even more of those things or shift those things. And, you know, of course, for you, you're at the highest level. And so some of the things you're shifting are going to look a little bit different than what some of the people listening might need to shift. But I think that's a really, you know, cool thing to hear is that you're always learning, you're always evolving, and staying at the top of the sport requires you to continue to evolve and learn things. And so that's such a cool, I would say, change and shift that, you know, you just went through from high school Emma to pro Emma. And, you know, one last thing I want to ask you about with running is race day. You have competed at, you know, the biggest stages in the world and at the Olympics, at world championships, and you mentioned struggling with race day nerves in high school. What is something that you've done to overcome race day nerves?
Well, you'll always have some race day butterflies. The night before a race, you're always going to be playing it through your head and you're always going to have a little bit of jitters, but that just means like you care. If you didn't, you probably the night before a fun run don't have jitters, you know, like if you're feeling some nerves, like that's good. And Joe likes to say, you know, confidence is earned. And so that I think was a big shift for me. It was in high school. I was just winging it. I had coaches who cared about me. And of course they did a solid job at coaching a 16-year-old who wasn't really into running. but I was so undertrained for what I was setting out to do, you know? And, it was scary. Every time that I lined up to race, I didn't know how it was going to feel, 'cause I had never done hard workouts. You know, I had really never, learned how to push myself in practice to where I'd be prepared. So that's where a lot of that race day anxiety came from, was the fear of the unknown. Then once I got to college and I actually started training harder and training with a lot of intention, you know, my coaches would be like, I remember the very first time I broke 5 minutes for the mile. It was my freshman year indoors, and our coach Heather Burrow said, Emma, I think you can run 4:55. And I was like, what? Like that was I was like, no way. I was never going to break 5 minutes. Like my PR was like 5:10. So I was like shocked, but they had trained me and prepared me. And, I ran 4:54.
Wow.
So
overachiever.
Yes. But so I think when you prepare and practice, a lot of the race nerves go away. And that was a big part for me. And then, just continuing, you know, the more you race and the more you have these moments, whether they're good or bad, you've experienced it all. So I've experienced falling in the Olympics and getting DQ'd. I've experienced winning an Olympic medal. You know, I've experienced a lot of different moments on big stages. And some of that you learn with time, that like not one race is the end of the world, but also you want to, when you're lining up, give that race your everything, because when you walk away, if you didn't, it haunts you. If you mm-hmm. finish a race and you didn't really go as hard as you can or dig that deep, that race will haunt you until your next race. And so it's a good reminder of like the upside is endless. Like, you can make yourself really proud. Think of all the positives that you want to be feeling from this. And the downside is if you try your hardest and you suck, like, that's just part of the sport sometimes. Or the downside is you don't try your hardest and that sucks. But like, as long as you try your hardest, what the outcome is you don't have to be scared of. And so, yeah, I way more nervous standing on the state cross country meet in high school than I was like at the Olympics.
Totally. And that's where sometimes I think runners forget, like, we do practice. It looks different than what a football team does or what a soccer team does, but we're practicing those mindset pieces in workouts that we're going to show up with on race day. And it sounds like that's something that you've really worked on, is, you know, showing up and challenging yourself and working through those tough moments so you feel confident that you can do it in a race. And that's really helped with your nerves. And one fun thing I want to ask you about with racing, because you've raced all over the world, tell us about the food in like the Olympic Village and some of the places that you've traveled, because you've been all over.
The Olympic Village food is good because they always have dozens of different kinds of food. They always have a McDonald's in the village, and that is always very popular. But then they have, you know, like a Japanese station, a Chinese station, a Brazilian station, an American station, a British station. Like, they have all different types of food. And it's fun because if you like a lot of different types of food, you can try a bunch. Or if you're very, if you're a little bit picky or a little bit more, you know, particular about what you want to be eating, there's something for everyone. But you would be surprised at those Diamond League meets and at some of those big meets that we go to around the world. Sometimes you get to the dining hall and you're like, huh, all right, I guess I'm having this tonight. And you're having like the lunch meal sometimes before. Typically it's good. They take good care of us. But once in a while, like the lunch, we always race at night. And there's been a couple times, like, the lunch meal that they serve is, like, the leftovers from dinner the night before. And you're like, I guess I'm having, like, Asian stir fry right before my race. Okay, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
But in general, you know, that's, again, like, kind of understanding food and understanding what you need. If you know, like, okay, I just need a good carb and good protein and some vegetable or fruit of sorts, like, you can kind of piece a meal together no matter where you are in the world.
That's so fun. And I think that's a good kind of like wrapping it up, where your ability to be flexible and your ability to find your fuel wherever you are has served you very well when you've been racing all over the world. So that's super fun. And before we kind of get into our fun rapid fire questions, what's just one last piece of advice that you would give any runner when it comes to fueling and nutrition?
Eat more than you think you need to, eat more carbs than you think you can, and eat more protein than you've ever been told you should. So like I feel like as runners, we know like, oh yeah, I got a carbo load, but like you having a plate of pasta the day before a race isn't necessarily what that means. And I think in general, women don't eat enough protein, and in general, most runners don't eat enough carbs. Most endurance athletes don't eat enough carbs. So it just eat a lot. That's all I can say.
That's perfect. I would fully agree with that. I would say almost every single runner I've worked with is not eating enough carbs, protein, and in general. So I fully support that advice. And thank you so much for sharing all of your experiences. It's so fun to hear about everything that you've been through in your career. And we're going to wrap up with our fun rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right, well, the first one we sort of already talked about. I'm going to switch it from like a pre-race to, what is your go-to pre-run snack?
Toast with peanut butter and honey.
Creatures of habit.
Yeah.
Perfect. What would you pick for your quote-unquote last meal?
I would pick a spicy margarita, a tub of Ben & Jerry's fish food ice cream, probably a best friend bolognese from my cookbook, and maybe like a really good slice of the banana cream pudding also from Magnolia Bakery.
Oh yeah, you love that. Nice. That's a good one. A lot of desserts in there.
They don't go together, but, you know.
A meal is however you define it, so that works. Yeah. Well, I guess this might be tough. What is your favorite dessert? You just named three really great ones.
Yeah, I was actually ranking this yesterday. So I think the order goes Magnolia Bakery banana cream pudding.
Yep.
Ben and Jerry's fish food ice cream. Then, really ice cream in general, but Ben and Jerry's is a step above. Then I really like cheesecake and creme brulee, and then chocolate chip cookies. Cookie dough, actually, more than the cookie itself. And Joe gets pissed at me when I say creme brulee. He's like, you never eat it. I was like, well, I'm not going to make it, but when it's there, I love it.
Yeah. How often do you encounter creme brulee? Wow, okay, there's your top five favorite desserts. I love that. What is your least favorite food?
Fish.
Yeah, that's right.
Of anything that can live in the ocean or rivers, I do not enjoy.
I always forget
And trust
that.
Me, listeners, I have tried it. I have taken hundreds of bites of fish items in my life, and it is not for me.
You gave it a fair chance.
Yeah, I did.
Well, you've been in so many places, so this one might be harder, maybe where you could go back to, but if you could travel anywhere in the world for a food experience or travel back to anywhere, where would you go?
It's so basic to say this, but I do really love, like, pizza in Italy. It's so basic to say, but yes, that's probably.
Okay. You can't go wrong. That's a good one. What is your go-to lazy meal?
Honestly, probably like my turmeric chicken for my cookbook. It's like, I just love, in fact, I actually, don't really cook it with turmeric anymore. I just put miso, mustard, maple syrup, olive oil, salt, and bake it. But mainly because the turmeric just stains and I kind of got sick of that. But that I love as an easy meal because you just pop that chicken in the oven and don't think about it. Yes, probably that.
Yum. I love miso chicken. That's a good one. And our last question, what is your go-to coffee or tea drink?
An Americano. Please.
Well, thank you so much, Emma, for sharing your experience with us. Where can everybody follow you or find you?
Well, I already told you where you can buy my cookbook.
Yes.
You can follow me on Instagram at Emma Coburn. Yep. I didn't know if there's my initial in there. I just have Twitter also, Emma J. Coburn. I don't really go on there much, but yeah, just Instagram or,
All right.
Or here at this podcast.
Yes, right here. And good luck this season. We'll all be cheering for you.
Thanks, Maddie.
Thanks, Emma. I miss you too.
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to keep up with Emma, you can find her on Instagram at Emma Coburn. Next week's episode will be a Q&A with me, your host, Maddie Alm. And if you would like to submit a question to be answered on air, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.